Hi, this is Jonathan from Lewis Jewelers. If you're in the market for a diamond, we can make the experience easy and stress-free. Not to mention, we can save you time and money. As a general manager, one of my roles is to hand-select every diamond that comes into our store. Don't shop alone. Come see me or one of my trusted advisors and find the perfect diamond today. Where Ann Arbor gets engaged, Lewis Jewelers.
Welcome on into the Wolverine.com podcast. Clayton Safey here with Chris Ballas and Ant Wright, our new analyst. Not as new anymore, but you know, about a month with us. He's doing video breakdowns on the YouTube channel there, some written stuff on the site as well. Former Michigan basketball player, content creator. You've seen him on Twitter, of course. We will talk a little bit about Rutgers, which we'll start with, and then we'll get into that Michigan State matchup. But let's start with that game on Tuesday. Shorthanded Michigan team, not able to get it done. But man, when you think about the impact of those bench guys and what they, you know, what it was, it's like, it's one thing to think that, you know, they would have helped, and I think they would have. But at the same time, that team was down 11 before they even subbed. And I know they brought in, you know, Kobe Bufkin, a kid who's playing a little more over the last couple games. Jace Howard played a big role in the first half, at least. Tough one altogether, but I think it was really kind of some of the similar problems we're seeing. It's not necessarily because they were shorthanded, so I guess I'll just throw it to both you guys on what you saw Tuesday. What were the problems?
I want to ask Ant, 14 points in the first 4.5 minutes, man, that they gave up again. This team's defense, is that the major problem of this team? Because right now these guys seem a little bit lost on that end.
That's one of the major problems. I think there is a severe lack of attention to detail is one. I also didn't see a lot of sense of urgency. Like, this is a very important game that you just can't lose. At the time, it was a quad three. Now it's a quad two. But at the same time, like, you, if you want to accomplish the goals that you set coming into the season, you can go on the road and lose that game, especially if you're sitting at 7-5. Rutgers is also 7-5. Now they're 8-5. Right. So that's another team who is now going to be above Michigan. So they are, you know, opportunities are kind of dwindling down here. They have to be mistake free from here on out. And it's not even about a tournament anymore. Now it's just about, you know, like, show that you can get better from game to game. Show a chain of consistency from game to game. And I think that's probably one of the more frustrating things. Defensively, there was one point they were
someone else doesn't like the defense.
What? All right. I love you, Walker. No, but man, you know, it is a really big, It is a consistency thing, and there was no sense of urgency in this, especially in that Rutgers game, where you just feel that this team needs that, especially if you want to go into a stretch that's coming up, hosting Michigan State, hosting Purdue, going on the road to an Illinois team who is hungry, who is doing very well in this Big Ten season, having a pretty good season overall, especially with the guys who have gone down, with their COVID stuff that they've had, and they're still able to, you know, be one of the top, in my opinion, top 20 teams in the country. So that's pretty much what summed up the first few minutes of that Rutgers game. It's like, okay, now we're you know, back to, you know, low sense of urgency, low attention to detail. And they go up 14-6 within minutes, which is insane for a Rutgers team who really can't score the ball like that. They want to muck it up. They want to keep it low. And for them to have 14 points, that is just not good. That's not good at all whatsoever.
Yep. Let me ask you this, Ant, because I remember that third team that you played on, John Beilein's third team. I think it was 2009 and 2010. There were high expectations for that team going into that year after you guys made the tournament the second year. Mm-hmm. And there was something off with that team, too. Do you see any parallels? Are there any similarities there? Or was that a different dynamic that led to that team, I guess, underachieving?
Yeah, there are some parallels. There are some different dynamics, too. What I would say one of the parallels is probably guys not understanding their role, wanting to be a bigger part when that's just wasn't their role at the time. Who's alpha, who's second in line, who's third in line, who's fourth in line. I think that was a big issue. Because different teams win in different ways. The way that 2009-2010 team was structured was more of a pyramid, right? This team, the way it's structured, should be more like a pyramid too, where you have your guy at top, you got your next tier of like two guys, and the next tier like three or four guys. I think this team has the mentality that there's a couple more guys up top and a couple more guys on that second, you know, and when that happens, there's going to be a big disconnect. I'm going to touch on Michigan State here as like the comparison. If you have a situation where you want to ask any player on Michigan State about any Michigan State player, they will tell you their job. And all of their answers will be very, very similar, right? You can ask their coaches the same thing, what each of their job is, and they will all say the same thing, in my opinion. I don't think you can do that with Michigan. I think you're going to have different answers from different guys, and I think that's kind of the issue. Guys just don't know what to expect out of each other. Guys expect more from some. Guys expect less from some. Some guys may not agree with the rotation. Some guys may not agree with the lineups. Some guys, you know, they're kind of checked out a little bit at this point. So there is just no real cohesiveness, I feel. And I think, you know, establishing roles and everybody else understanding what your role is and what their role is, that's the separation between an okay team and a great team. Like last year, you know, you can ask each of those guys what each person's job was. You can ask Isaiah Livers, hey, what's Austin Davis's job? Come in, throw his body around, ISO on the post a little bit, finish with your left and your right. You ask Austin Davis what Franz's job is. Just be a monster on both ends. Get deflections. Do this. Do, you know what I mean? Like we, yep. And as a fan, you know what each job of those guys are, right? And just watching Michigan State, I know the job of each guy. Me watching Michigan, it changes from game to game. And yep. There's still no identity, and we're 13 games in. I think that's also a problem that we also saw in 2009, 2010. What this team should have though over that 09-10 team is a little bit of leadership. I love Manny, I love Deshaun, those guys are my dudes. But we all knew that the guys that got us over the hump in 08-09 was David Merritt and CJ Lee. And you know, they weren't the guys who were putting up a bunch of points, and they weren't the guys who were showing out, and they weren't the guys who were going to be like microwaves. It just hits you with like 10 or 12 randomly, like me, who would just not play for three games and then come in and just hit a team with like three or four threes. Like that wasn't going to happen. But they were very, very solid. Like even on like plane rides, you know, being able to like talk to those guys about life, like in between games and practices, we're on the side and they're talking about this and that, the little things like that. This team had that this year, I believe, with Eli, maybe a little bit with Hunter, but especially with Eli, because Eli is super smart. If you talk to CJ Baird, one thing that he has really harped on is how smart Eli Brooks is and how he thinks at another level. So that's the one thing that's different with this team. Like they have that leadership coming back, but I'm just wondering if his voice is being respected the way it should.
And that kind of brings up my next question, because I agree, like a lot of that is on the leadership. We've talked about that. And we talked about that, I think, 3 weeks ago when it was just you and I about how does this team have the fire, you know, as a leader. We know Eli Brooks is a smart player. We know he's a very good player. You know, he's turned himself into probably the best version of himself, but he kind of puts himself more in that quieter mold, and it's just kind of his personality, and I'm not blaming him for that, but there's no Xavier Simpson, on this team. How much of, the lack of role definition and things like that, how much of that is coaching? Because we've had a couple people, I've had people, say to me, like, why is Juwan Howard getting a pass for this team? And I've said, I don't think he is. I mean, we're talking about all the things that are going wrong. We're talking about all this. But from your perspective as a former player, how much of that is coaching and how much of that is, hey, there's just not the guys on this team right now to, get that out of the rest of the guys? Like, Juwan Howard might be telling them one thing, but, if you don't have that leader on the floor, and not saying Eli's not a leader, but the right leader at, for this team on the floor, how much of that is in the coach's control?
Some of it can be under the coach's control, but I'll tell you what, man, as a competitor, losing sucks. And when you're losing, when you're about a 500 team, the voices from leadership aren't as loud as when you're 13-1, 12-2. Because now it's like, well, you got us here. Like, maybe we should be doing something else, right? Now there's that, hey, what should we do? What should we do? So, that part is unfortunate from Juwan's standpoint. I've been very vocal about the rotations and very vocal about the lineups and how the construct of the team right now in the top 10 needs to be adjusted a bit. Like, on paper, they're a talented team, and that's why Michigan fans are so confused. They're like, okay, this is a super talented team, but why aren't things clicking and coming together? Talent can take you so far in college basketball. This isn't college football. This is not college football where, like, you could have a team like Georgia, right, just stomp. Or Alabama, just be able to overcome things with their talent and just stomp. You do need talent when it comes to Division I basketball, but these guys have been playing against each other since they were fourth and fifth grade. They're not afraid of each other. They know each other's tendencies. There's not a mental block there. There's ways to scheme with talent really, really well in basketball, the way that the game flows. So the talent is still good on the team. The talent is good, but they got to find a way to be able to, they still got to believe in the coach, because I guarantee all the stuff that I preview, they harp on times 10 in practice. Why isn't that being executed is the only thing. I'm not at practices. I try to see things from a basketball lens, but like Beeline, he drilled so much film, It's very hard to not see certain things, like 4 years of just film, just being drilled in your forehead. Like, man, we've sat in film for like an hour and a half, and he would break down one play for like 15 minutes, going over every little, based off of how a guy steps when he passes, based off of how a guy turns and all that stuff. And that's the extreme. I highly doubt Juwan is that extreme with his detail, but there's got to be something there that, him and his staff need to change with their approach in terms of how they're teaching things. If they need to lessen 10 points of focus down to 4 or 3, because the attention to detail and the attention span on this team's a little bit lower, which is fine. You got to know your team. If they need to focus on maybe 2 or 3 things or 4 things instead of 6, 7, or 8, maybe that can really get the ball rolling in terms of improving every single game.
On that point, Musa Diabate, his head seems to be spinning a little bit, trying to learn a couple of different positions. I think Beilein was one position for a freshman, right, when they first got here? He wasn't trying to overload them? Right.
Yeah, because offense is nuts.
Yeah. Right. And so when you're looking at Musa out there, and you actually had a great breakdown of one play where he was out of position on defense, and I'm thinking, you know, sometimes it just takes a little bit longer to click, and maybe he's being overloaded a little bit. And part of that is by necessity. If Brandon Johns isn't going to give you anything at that position, Musa Diabate is going to have to be, they're going to have to accelerate him and take the bad with the good, right? I mean, this kid is a freak athlete and he brings a lot to the table offensively and in terms of energy, but I don't think that was the kind of role that they envisioned for him in his first year, having to rely on him so much. Am I wrong? And does it look like the game's going a little fast for him right now?
He is, first of all, I love watching him play because he goes hard all the time. And I got a bunch of replies and mentions about Moose's lack of effort on that box out with Mulcahy. And I was like, look, you don't understand. That wasn't an effort thing. That was Mulcahy with his 3 or 4 years of experience that outsmarted him. It wasn't about an effort, because if you really watch, Musa went to block. He was down, he was low, he had his elbows out, and he's looking, okay? Because once a guy doesn't really crash, you pursue the basketball. There's no blocking out, right? And as an athlete, the ball's 11 feet in the air, you can just go get that, right? So what happened was, he went to block, there was no contact, so now he goes to the next thing and pursuing, right? Once he pursued, he didn't know that as he turned his head, he just right behind his back and got the basketball. That was 100%. That was just he beat him upstairs. That wasn't an effort thing. Every play that he does that is like a boneheaded play, it's him going too hard. Mm-hmm. He's never had a boneheaded play where it was a lack of effort. You know what I mean? And you can kind of live with those if you're a freshman. It would drive Beilein crazy, but him having such a high motor all the time, you can't not play him. But you have to find a way to control that energy and focus it towards positive plays and not negative plays. That play where I broke down, where he was out of position, that is a shell drill. That is something that you learn when you're in high school, where you move when the ball moves. The ball moved twice. He didn't move at all. That's like super basic stuff. But at the same time, I don't know what they're talking about in practice. I don't know what they're going over. But that is a drill that is used at the lowest and lowest of levels, that should still be used in college consistently, just to keep the basic things okay. But and in terms of his playing time, I mean, him coming in and playing over Johns, you saw in the first one or two games where he wanted it. Like, he demanded more playing time with this play, with this energy, with, you know, what he gave. And, you know, watching the games, I'm just like, yo, Brandon better watch out. Brandon better watch out, man. This dude is coming after you hard right now. And I'm a big Brandon Johns fan. I like Brandon a lot, and I don't understand a lot of things that, you know, Brandon does, unfortunately. But like, I see the talent. And I saw the talent his senior year in high school, and I'm just like, what is going on? You talk to, like, pro trainers out in, like, Indianapolis and, like, Indiana, and they're just like, yo, Brandon's a pro, but I don't know. I don't know between the ears what's happening, what's going on. And I think that's what that is. But, well, they're shooting basketball outside.
They agree with you.
Who is true love? Celebrate the moment.
Hi, this is Jonathan from Lewis Jewelers. If you're in the market for a diamond, we can make the experience easy and stress-free. Not to mention, we can save you time and money. As a general manager, one of my roles is to hand-select every diamond that comes into our store. Don't shop alone. Come see me or one of my trusted advisors and find the perfect diamond today. Where Ann Arbor gets engaged, Lewis Jewelers.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Charlie starts barking.
I think you nailed it though with the in between the ears, and that's not something that you can always control, man. And that's what I tell people all the time. You know, when the lights go on, and Phil Martelli talks about when the popcorn's popping, how do you play? Sometimes guys just don't react the same. There are guys that have ice in their veins, and there are other guys who don't, and they think too much, or they get nervous, or whatever. And maybe that's the case. You know, we've talked about with different coaching staffs now about Brandon and his confidence. Because this kid, it's like you said, man, he's got all the skills to be a pro, but sometimes it never clicks. So you're hoping, you know, maybe a guy like Greg Harden comes out of nowhere, you know, and gets to him and talks down and or something like that, because you're just waiting for the light to go on and for him to be that guy that we saw against Rutgers at Madison Square Garden a few years ago, you know.
And people are going to laugh and be like, Brandon John's a pro. They're like, oh, brother, these guys don't know. Dude, this dude was 6'8", 6'9", grabbing, like blocking shots off the backboard, grabbing it, and then going up against a point guard, dribbling the ball up the court, hit him with double combo moves and hitting a three from like 25. Like, that's like crazy, crazy stuff. And his trajectory, he was supposed to be a first-round pick. And, you know, I don't know what's kind of went on. I'm not sure what, because like these kids can be going through stuff that we don't even know about, or, you know, like influenced. I'm not sure, but like they, but yeah, man, he was so, his potential, he had more than DJ Wilson.
Yes.
He had more than Mo. Like, and that's no disrespect to them either, but their trajectory, you saw that. And then I had to talk people off a cliff for 2 years about DJ. then he finally does what he does. And I'm really surprised that Brandon never got to that point. I am very surprised.
Yep. Well, he's got half a season left, right, Clay? So here's hoping, man, that maybe the light goes on. You never know. It's never too late, kid. So,
and it could start tomorrow against his hometown East Lansing, you know, Michigan State Spartans. Obviously a huge game. Michigan does not want to fall to 500 in this season, 1-3 in the Big Ten. At the same time, they're probably going to be shorthanded again in this game, so that's a caveat. But Ant, when I look at this team, one of my big thoughts about it is similar to what you talked about earlier, where they all kind of have their role, and the similarly to how Michigan's pieces haven't really fit quite together this year, Michigan State's have. I mean, as we know, transfer point guards are kind of hit or miss. Tyson Walker seems to be a big hit, you know, averaging over 5 assists per game. They still play Hogard a little bit. But it's a very good defensive team. They don't shoot a ton of threes, but they make them at a really high clip, top 10 in the country. Both you guys, I guess, what are your impressions of Michigan State, how Michigan may match up? And I know, again, the caveat is that Michigan's probably not going to be or definitely not going to be at full strength. So you don't know exactly who's going to be there, and you know you're not going to have all your depth. But at the same time, this is a huge game at home. A maze out at Chrysler Center, and hey, maybe they pull one out here. And KenPom, by the way, has this as a Michigan is a 2-point favorite, which is just crazy to me. And I know they're more on the analytics side than looking at, you know, who's not playing or whatever. But even with that, pretty surprising to me.
And
So they should be shorthanded, but if there is something came down yesterday with the whole new protocols. It's like it's a 5-day protocol, and if you have no symptoms, you're good to go. I heard that they had COVID issues a couple days prior to Rutgers. So I'm not sure if those guys will be good to go to practice yesterday or today to be able to play tomorrow. I'm not sure about that. Also, if you're vaccinated and you've had close contact, you no longer need to be quarantined. And I think that's as of yesterday. So, like, let's hope that, you know, they have more subs tomorrow, hopefully. But either way, you got your starters. So figure it out, right? Figure it out. And let's play Isaiah Barnes over another player. And then you should be okay, too. But yeah. Let's be real about this. This Michigan State team has been, I'm going to say, a little bit surprising. One of Tom Izzo's better jobs this year, in my opinion. Probably his least talented team in the last decade or so. But they have found a way to really come together and really maximize their roles. And I'm looking at their team and their roster. Last year, they didn't have Xavier Tillman. They didn't have Cassius Winston, and they struggled. Aaron Henry stepped up and played as an All-American, and got them through to the NCAA tournament. This year, they don't have Cassius. They don't have Tillman. They don't have Henry. And I'm like, who on this team is going to be able to do it? I was always a big Malik Hall guy. I was always a big Gabe Brown guy. Also, I was a big Joey Hauser guy. So I'm like, okay, which one of these guys is going to step up? And it's been Malik Hall and Gabe Brown. Gabe Brown has been playing like an all Big Ten player. Malik Hall, I mean, he's had some really, really nice games this year. And all their players expect that. All those players look to Gabe to be able to pull them through. Max Christie, who came in as the number one shooting guard in the country, he's shown to be a pretty good two-way player as well, being able to also play a bit of defense. He's about 6'6", has long arms, a bit disruptive. Marcus Bingham has been a dude this year. Marcus Bingham's probably should win Defensive Player of the Year, but we know how those votes can go, you know.
Yes.
But in my opinion, you know, he should probably win Defensive Player of the Year this year. With the way that he just disrupts the paint. Anything within 5 feet, the other team knows. They're either going to get their shot blocked, adjusted, or they're thinking about it, so they shoot something crazy up on the rim. But matchups are going to be very, very tough. What's good and bad for Jones, kind of, is that against Rutgers, Jones was guarded with a lot of size. He was guarded by guys who were 6'4", 6'6", 6'7". Against this team, he's going to be guarded by a guy who was smaller than him. Now, he has really good hands, and Devontae has shown to push off a lot. So he's going to get up in him. He's going to force Devontae to really be more shifty. And if Devontae can use his body some without being an offensive fouler, he should be okay. I'm more wondering who's going to guard Max Christie. You know, if you're Eli Brooks, you're 6'1", you're giving up 5-6 inches to a good shooter. I'm interested in seeing Caleb Houston versus Max Christie. The power forward position, Musa versus Malik Hall, I'm going to be very interested in that. Bingham versus Hunter, I'm going to be interested in that. They actually match up pretty well with Michigan State, in my opinion. But I'm not worried about the first 33, 34 minutes. I'm just not. Michigan could be up by 10 or down by 10. This is going to come down to the last 5 or 6. Who's going to put the lineups in to win the game? Who is going to execute better to win the game? Who is going to make the right calls to win the game, whether defensively or offensively? That's what it's going to come down to. And that's the part that, you know, worries me, because Michigan State has found their formula of who opens games, who their rotation is and who closes games. Michigan still doesn't know who that is. And I hope they find that. I hope they find that in this game. And then continue the following game, right? Just give me two games back to back where you're like, okay, this team has an identity. Not one game and then you do nothing. You know what I mean? But, yeah.
And I think this is the perfect time for this game, to be honest with you, coming off Rutgers. This is basically do or die for the season. And I know people will say, oh, there's no such thing as a must-win game. But I think the effort, because it's the rival, and because that gym's going to be packed and you're having the maze out and everything else, I think that's going to be there from the get-go, and that they understand that this is it, man. The urgency has to be there in this game. A, or you're going to get embarrassed by your rival. B, you're going to lose again to your rival at home, and you're essentially going to be out of – I mean, right now they're on the outside looking in for the tournament anyway, but this is a chance to turn the season kind of like that team where Stu Douglas hit that shot when they started. Now, you guys, they were 1-6 back then when Stu Douglas pulled out that shot at Michigan State. But you've got an opportunity to salvage your season and turn things around with a huge win over a rival that can really springboard this season. So that's the hope, I think, tomorrow. And as to your other points, I think you're spot on. And this is a team that Michigan can beat. And Tom Izzo said yesterday, and he said, anybody who thinks this isn't a good Michigan team is crazy. I'll tell him right now, I'm not crazy, but right now this is not a good Michigan team. But to your point, man, it's about how playing together and meshing the way that Michigan State has this year. If they do that, I think they can certainly give Michigan State a game and certainly win that game, Clay.
Yeah, and he was doing his whole fake compliment thing, talking about how much talent they have and kept emphasizing that as well. That's just kind of Tom Izzo, but that's another story for another day.
He's doing the Lou Holtz thing when Lou Holtz was at Notre Dame, man. So.
Anything else on this game, Ant or Chris, you know, before we send people off and, hey, Michigan take their shot at the Spartans?
I got one thing, and I need to know where to get the hat, man, because I've had people asking me about
That's right.
The Ant Right gear.
Really? Oh man. I do have a store set up. It's literally just for me and the family right now.
Okay.
And
that hurts, so man.
Are we included in that?
That hurts.
Facts. All right. So also I'll give you an exclusive. People like my baseball hats.
Mm-hmm.
Those are super nice. So I got the gold and black Nikes. I am ordering a Michigan themed and a Lions themed.
Awesome.
The Michigan theme is going to be blue with like a maize, like a yellow, right? Emblem. And then I'm going to have a light blue with a silver emblem. And I'm going to do a giveaway on my Twitter like I did with my other hats. And then get feedback on what people think. And then from there, I'll probably put them up on a store somewhere. I have to get with the people who makes these to like see what we can work out and have my people talk to their people and kind of set it up.
Yeah, man. We'll get it on the site at thewolverine.com and give people I'm telling you, man, there's money to be made. I'm just saying. Especially the winter hats, man. My kid loves that thing. Did you come up with the logo yourself or who did that?
Funny enough, I used like a cartoon. It was like a cartoon, like anime thing. Mm-hmm. And then I adjusted it and put a beanie on them. Then I adjusted it again and I put Ant on it. And then I had this for a long, long time. And I used to change the beanie whenever I felt like it. And sometimes it was like a Michigan beanie. Then remember a few years ago, I did this thing where I changed the beanie to the opposing team that Michigan was playing, and they won every single game. So people made me do that every single game from there. So like I had to make like a Texas A&M beanie. I had to make a Loyola beanie. I had to make a Villanova beanie, a Rutgers beanie, like all these different beanies. And then that summer, I was like I need an actual, like I need something that people can recognize me by. So I took that animation beanie, right? And I went to this logo company and I'm like, hey, look, outline this with gold. And sure enough, so it's the guy.
Yep.
And then the beanie right there. And so perfect. They did that, and I was like, give me gold, make it super shiny, and boom, that was it. So I've had it for about 2.5-3 years. And now it's to the point where, like, someone completely random, and I'll be in some group chat, and they would go, like, they never heard of me. They never heard of me, but they say that they see this all the time.
Yep, and you're growing your brand,
I like
man.
That recognition.
It's hard to miss.
What I mean?
Yeah.
So, like, they'll see that. They'll be like, oh, I know who that guy is. Never talked to him before. I don't know who that is, but I see that thing all the time.
Yep. Yeah.
So
it's
going to
be a trademark going on, man.
You're everywhere.
It's great stuff. So
I try.
Ant, thanks, man. We got 5 minutes here before we go on with Juwan. We'll tell him you said hi. So, but we appreciate
definitely.
You, man, and everything
we'll,
you do
we'll
for
suggest,
us.
Yeah, we'll suggest some of the lineups you've been talking about. And
absolutely. Yeah.
Tell him I said, you know, go blue, get it done. You know, we're all behind you as fans, you know, so.
And former players. Some
yes. Yes. Fans and former players. I'm still a fan, though. I'll see you guys.